You're listening to the News Project Podcast for the week of October 25th, 2021, brought to you by GNAT TV. This podcast brings you these stories. VFW Post celebrates 75th year. A Wrinkle in Time takes BBA stage. Founders Hall opens. And Job Fair matches jobs and workers.
The Veterans of Foreign Wars Hornet Fowler Post 6471 was founded in April 1946 by a group of local veterans returning from service in World War II. This year marked the 75th anniversary of the club, and a celebration was held Saturday, October 23rd, at the post's headquarters on Depot Street. It's been their place ever since 1948. The party was originally planned for last April, but was delayed due to the COVID pandemic. But that night, many of the Post's members gathered to dine and celebrate and remember those who had helped build the organization. One of those who has been around the VFW Post just about as long as any active member is Don Weeks, who served as the Post commander several times and was helping out in the kitchen before the dinner, which is where we caught up with him.
I joined back in 70, later part of 70, and it was at that time roughly 600 members here. Now we're only down to 210, I believe. People moving away and people passing away and so on. But we've done, in all the years, I've been commanding here four years, two different times, a total of 8 years. And in the total time that I was commander, we remodeled this place three times, maybe, you know, three, four times. The whole front entrance is all new. We decided to put new doors in and inside the building. And we just recently did it with Chris being his commander, and we do a lot of things here. We do things, Christmas parties for all the kids in town. You know, doesn't have to be a member of the post. Halloween parties for kids. We sponsor baseball, Little League baseball, and Boy Scouts, the troops, and whatnot. And we do a lot. We give a lot to the veterans home. I think probably my lifetime here, we've probably given a couple $100,000 to the vets home and stuff. One year it was pretty close to $65,000-$70,000 just in one year, you know, so.
And are you seeing many like younger veterans coming in, who were in Iraq or Afghanistan?
We have some. Our commander now is from there, and we have probably five or six other that are active now, and but not a whole lot.
Chris Conti, a veteran who served in Afghanistan, is the current commander of the post. And we had a chance to talk to him before the anniversary celebration.
No, our main goal is to support veterans, not necessarily in a social club. You know, people do think of the VFW as the bar, as the club, but our main mission is to help and support through donations, charity, you know, serving in funeral details, assisting in local. You know, we do Christmas dinner every year. That's for the community, not just veterans, but. You know, much more than just a drinking place. That's what we try to get across. We don't have any formal way, you know, of tracking. We do happen to know who in the area serves in the military just because it's a small community. And when they get back from overseas, we reach out to them. We offer free memberships to active duty veterans who qualify and kind of get them while they're still serving, get them to join. And hopefully when they move home, they would want to, you know, continue to participate with the VFW.
The post was named after two local men who died during wartime. James B. Harned of the U.S. Air Force, a 1940 graduate of Burn Burton, died on July 1, 1942, from malaria while being held in a prisoner of war camp in the Philippines. Harvey Clapp Fowler of the U.S. Marines was a 1935 graduate of Burn Burton. He was killed by mortar fire while landing on the island of Guam in August of 1944. The post is an active place not only on Veterans Day, which is coming up shortly in November, and also Memorial Day, when the post helps to commemorate those who made the ultimate sacrifice in the line of duty, with a ceremony at the Factory Point Cemetery. But over the years, the club has also provided a wide array of services to the community, including scholarships, fundraisers, sponsorships, and cash contributions, as well as years of helping veterans and their families. Philip Bourne was one who spoke at the dinner. His father, Lynn Bourne, was elected as the first commander of the post back in 1946.
And I was very proud to have my dad be the first veteran, first commander of the post, and got to spend a lot of time with them at the VFW camp. We always got invited to spend the last weekend of deer season one night at the VFW camp. And then we got to come back and be here at the bar until 9 o'clock. And then you were shipped out. But that's how I knew a lot of these veterans that I grew up with. And I'm 68 years old. My dad would probably be about 100 right now. But I'm very proud to still be a member of this post. Thank you.
You're welcome.
There's also an active auxiliary division at the post, as Deborah Wilkins noted.
Wyman and Harriet McEachran were the first two delegates elected to the department convention, the last one being my grandmother. Throughout the years, the girls have sponsored the essay contest at Manchester Elementary School, helped with the kids' Halloween party, held Thanksgiving and Easter basket raffles, and held bingos at the VA hospital and the Vermont Veterans Home. Throughout the years, things have changed. In 2015, at the National Convention in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the VFW voted to allow eligible males to join the auxiliary, and the name changed from the Ladies Auxiliary to the Veterans of Foreign Wars of the United States to the Veterans of Foreign Wars Auxiliary. Some of the same money raisers are still held, such as raffles, suppers, not so frequently as in the past, and dances. Today, the single most money-raising event is our basket party, which is held twice a year. Our overarching goal is still the same today as it was in 1946. The auxiliary is here to support our veterans, past and present, their families, and the communities in which they live. Another goal is to promote patriotism, instilling love of our great country to everyone, but especially to our children.
Veterans Day is coming up soon on November 11th, and the Post is planning their annual observance at 11 a.m. that morning, with a lunch to follow. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. A Wrinkle in Time is the next play to be presented by the theater department at Burn Burton Academy, marking a return to the stage at the Riley Center after a year of having to work around the restrictions imposed by the COVID pandemic. The curtains will rise at 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday, November 3rd, and the performances will run through Saturday, November 6th. Originally written as a young adult novel by American author Madeline L'Engle and published in 1962, the award-winning book traces the story of three main characters who travel through time and space to save one of the characters' fathers and, along the way, the world. Conflicts of good and evil and light and darkness are explored as the young characters grow and evolve along their journey. Jim Raposa of the Burn Burton Creative Arts Faculty directed the play.
We were looking at the shows for this year. I had picked one show that was very easy to do and would have required very little work on our part to get the fall play up and running. And then in a bit of an off-the-cuff remark, my set designer was like, "Really? You really like that show?" And I was like, "I don't know if I really like that show." So I went back to the drawing board and started reading shows and started trying to figure things out. And I came upon four versions of A Wrinkle in Time. And what really made me choose it was that it was about a young woman's journey and how she finds herself and matures and literally she saves the day. And I thought that was really important. We always have these heroes out there in the world, and it's nice to have a heroine. And the story has sci-fi, it has romance, it has all of these different aspects of fantasy in it. And I thought it would also be a great show for young people to come and see.
So what was the biggest challenge of doing it? That set in there looks kind of interesting. Was that hard to construct? Or
It's interesting. The set itself was the easiest to construct. As our sets go, it's been time-consuming with layering what Paul Molinelli has wanted to do. But we've also had a great tech class that has worked on it, and the kids have been coming in on the weekends. So in certain ways, it's the easiest set we've done. But what we've done this year is through the generosity of
BBA, and through some fundraising that happened during CLU, we've been able to bring in some new lighting into the area. So we have a new light board that we were brought in thanks to the fundraising from CLU, and then we were able to purchase some moving lights that we are using, and we've brought in Stuart Duke, who used to work up at Weston Playhouse and help run that, and has done lighting design for us for years, in addition to working on Broadway and teaching. He is doing our lighting design for us. And so that's what's doing the heavy lifting in that sense.
So last spring you had to do the play up there in the courtyard in the open air, and now you're back in the theater. I just wondered, is the whole pandemic still impacting all of this stuff in some way?
I mean, we're outside, so I don't have to wear a mask. So we are still under the mandate from, I believe, the governor, where if we are inside, we have to wear masks. And so we've been doing that. The students have been doing that. We've been practicing in masks. And we are still trying to ascertain whether we will be able to not have masks on when we perform. The audience has to wear masks. And so we're kind of following what Broadway has set down and what those unions have set down. But we're not too sure yet what will happen with the students. And we're just waiting to hear back on that.
Is there going to be social distancing in the seating?
No. In Broadway houses and in theaters that are happening now, they are mandating that everybody is vaccinated and show proof of that and wear a mask. We're not mandating that, but we believe that it is an hour show, and our social distancing, we will try to spread the audience out depending upon how many seats are available that night. I mean, after last year and after the pandemic, they have been incredibly excited to get back together and get working again. The social aspect that they missed for almost a year and a half really affected them. And so it's been interesting to see them kind of grow together as a cast, gain their confidence, and now to see them really supporting each other has been a joy to see.
Olga Stauffer and Jesse Dykes are two members of the cast who talked with us about the play and their characters in it.
Well, you know, the role that I play is I'm the man with red eyes. In the second act, the main characters travel to Kamazots, which is the sort of headquarters of darkness, and I'm one of the first people that they meet once they've gotten to the Central Intelligence Building, which is the central of evil on Kamazots. Well, the show definitely is, you know, there's a lot of science fiction. It centers around Meg Murray, who's a girl who her father has been missing for the last few years. He's a scientist that works for NASA. And so the plot is that he has figured out a rudimentary time-space travel mechanism and has been testing it out for the government, but he's captured by evildoers in another galaxy, I suppose. And so the course of the show is Meg, her little brother Charles Wallace, and her friend Calvin as they journey across time and space to save their father. Yeah, I haven't really been involved in the theater program for the last 2 years. I went away to Mountain Campus, which is the semester program at BBA, and then COVID happened, so I wasn't really involved during COVID, but I'm glad to be back.
I play It, the big baddie of the show. It is seen as the main antagonist of the story, the one holding Meg's father, the one taking control over Kamazots and, in frank terms, enslaving its people. No one likes it. I had a lot of fun with it because Jim has been very ambitious with the tech that he wants to use in this. It's made so many different parts, so many moving pieces to it that make it really fun to engage with. Like, I'm not just a character. If you'll see, I'm actually on stilts and I have a LED face mask. So there's all sorts of little details that he's put in here that look amazing. So it's really cool to see this show. I read A Wrinkle in Time as a child. I had my mother read it to me when I was in like fourth grade. And so it's really nice to see this show put on stage, being in it.
So was there any big challenge to kind of mastering this part, or did it kind of come naturally and easily, or?
One of the big things with it is every little tick, every little reaction that occurs in a normal person has to be absent. It isn't a human, it is just a being. It is rhythmic and perfect, perfect. So anything that I would do normally while just standing there, I can't do. I have to stay in character. I have to be it. I have to be in rhythm. Another thing that's just special to it is the stilts. Those took me a while to get used to. And eventually we had them raised up a few times. But by now I feel pretty confident in walking around on them and navigating the stage.
You can obtain tickets for the play by visiting the Burn Burden Academy website. Again, opening night is Wednesday, November 3rd at 6:30 p.m., with performances running through until Saturday, November 6th. For the GNET TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Ladies and gentlemen, Founders Hall is officially open.
Founders Hall, a 25,000 square foot building that's been under construction for more than a year, behind the main seminary and Rowland Center buildings on the campus of Burn Burden Academy, saw its formal opening and ribbon cutting on Tuesday, October 19th. Graduated from the class of 1959, and an employee of the school for over 60 years, did the honors.
Thank you, Mark. And as I look out over the courtyard, I look at all of these students. Over my tenure here at Burn Burton, it's been you, as students, that's really wanted me to stay here. So I really thank you all. You've got a beautiful campus. Behind me, we got one of the most beautiful buildings. You've got to look at that building and say to yourself, 50 years down the road, that building is going to look the same. We got to take care of what we have. So I thank everyone for doing this. Thank you.
These scissors cut the ribbon for the Smith Center, for the Rowland Center, and now they're going to cut the ribbon for Founders Hall.
Before that, students had converged on the courtyard between the school's seminary building, Rowland Center, and the new Founders Hall, where a parking lot used to be, and heard from a trio of speakers: Board of Trustees Chairman Ed Campbell, Assistant Head of School Meg Kenny, and former Head of School Chuck Scranton.
All that goes to show you is that today is not about the past. It's always about moving forward, always improving. It's about this beautiful building, and it's about the future. Burn Burton's future, your future, and the future of the Bulldogs that will follow you. Founders Hall is here for you. Take advantage of it, enjoy it, learn in it, and thrive in it. I know you will.
Today we add Founders Hall to our Burn Burton home. Our newest learning space is ready to welcome us. Like all BBA spaces, Founders Hall is a place of possibility, a place where gifts harbored deep inside you are discovered. Founders Hall is unfinished, and I don't mean the final touches on the central stairs and bookshelves, or a missing piece of carpet, or the unfinished concrete. Buildings come to life when their people and purpose come together. Nestled at the base of Mount Equinox, Founders Hall, arms outstretched, welcomes you to complete the building. Let the sweeps of landscape focus your learning in new ways. Notice the expanse of the building, the long views. Let them deepen and refine your vision for today and for your future. Let the scale invite you to think bigger and beyond your time at BBA.
Let me just tell you something, guys. There's no place in Vermont, no high school in Vermont like this. In terms of culture, climate, caring teachers, and of course, facilities. The opportunities that this school has for you all is quite amazing and quite unparalleled. When I come back to facilities, because you have the best teachers on the planet, but you want the facilities for them to fulfill their wishes and dreams, it leaves things short. So if you look around this campus, I mean, just look over your shoulder there, the Roland Center. Barry and Wendy also were responsible for the lower campus. Total renovation of the gymnasium complex, adding the addition on there, giving you incredible music facilities in the old locker rooms, new locker rooms, and so forth. They have funds here at the school that allow you guys to travel, allow faculty to travel, allow for professional development, and support their salaries. Now behind me is another manifestation of their incredible generosity. There are certain names associated with this school and its history. Joseph Burt, Josiah Burton, Bob and Peg Smith from that magnificent facility over there, Barbara Riley from the theater in the lower campus. You think all the contributions those folks have made to the school, even back in 1829, and put that in today's dollars and combine them all, it doesn't come close to what Barry and Wendy Rowland have done for this school, for you.
Then it was time to head for class. Students headed into the various classrooms within the three-story building, which will house the school's English and Social Studies departments, as well as the school's library. It will also house a makerspace. The sweeping staircase was still not quite fully finished, but the rest of the building was good to go, after some delays caused by supply chain issues obtaining some of the building's components. The top level of the building, which houses the bell tower room, will be a conference area and meeting space, as well as offering sweeping views of the school's campus. Earlier, before the ceremonies began, we had a chance to hear from both current headmaster Mark Tashin and his predecessor Chuck Scranton about the significance of the project.
You know, we launched this building in the teeth of the pandemic about 15 months ago, and we wanted to get Vermont back to work, and we wanted to build something that said there is going to be a future. And I'm really excited that the future is here and the future is now.
What do you think is going to be the main addition that this building will bring to the campus and the school, the curriculum?
Well, it brings space. It brings excitement. And it also brings, the architecture is designed to support a different kind of learning that is more integrated. And so we're hoping to bring our disciplines together in a way that hasn't been possible before.
It just seems like yesterday we were standing out here with a big crowd, you know, dedicating the Roland Center. Here we are, whatever years later, and this building's amazing. So yeah, it's a privilege to be back here. I'm happy to be here. Yeah, you know, in my job as executive director of the Roland Foundation, I visit every high school in Vermont. I hope the kids here realize how special this place is and what they have. You know, the buildings are obvious. And the building behind me is just, you know, I think a lot of colleges would be glad to have something like that on their campus. So yeah, it's a special place.
We also caught up with Kyle Murphy, a member of BBA's class of 2007, who was the lead architect of the project.
It's surreal. I mean, we've been working on this for about 3 years now between design and construction. It was about the end of the year, I guess it would have been 2019, when we got started working with the faculty, and we had a lot of stakeholder workshops, and we were really trying to get a sense of what was going to go into the building, because there's all these moving pieces around the campus right now. So we spent about a year and a half or so on the design, and then spring of 2020, we kicked this off, the construction, and it's been great. We've had an amazing team of architects, engineers, designers, and then we've had a wonderful partnership with DEW Construction, who was the construction manager on this. So it's surreal to see this actually coming to fruition. You know, we've been very fortunate to work with, the leaders of the school have been incredibly ambitious in this, and, you know, really not kind of constraining us to just do something that's like everything else on campus, but you know, something that's really, as Mark says, it's kind of looking to the future while honoring the past. So we're honored to open this today, and you know, we hope that this is something that the students and the faculty will enjoy for many generations.
The building is a result of a $20 million philanthropic gift from Barry and Wendy Rowland, the largest ever to a secondary school in Vermont. The Rowlands had already contributed large sums towards other buildings and programs at Burn Burton. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. On Wednesday, October 20th, the first of two back-to-back job fairs sponsored by the state's Labor Department was held in Bennington at the state office complex. A second one was planned for the following day in Rutland. The outdoor event was designed to bring together would-be employers and employees. Just as is the case across the country, many employers are struggling to find qualified workers to fill positions within their companies and organizations. The reasons often cited include workers' concerns about childcare, exposure to COVID infections, housing availability if they don't already live in the area, salary levels, and a general sense that the COVID pandemic has made many rethink their career tracks. Some historically and relatively low-paying jobs within the service industries, which might have drawn applicants in the past, have struggled to fill those positions. We met up with Wendy Morse, the Department of Labor's regional manager for the department's offices in Bennington-Rutland, to give us the background on the job fair.
Yeah, so we try to do these twice a year, once in the fall and once in the spring. This is the first job fair we've done since the pandemic hit, so we're really excited to be back in person. As employers have great hiring needs, we currently have, I believe, over 18,000 job postings statewide in our Vermont JobLink system, and certainly not enough job seekers to fill those openings, so that's definitely a challenge on the employer side. And on the job seeker side, I think some are certainly still trying to figure out what it is they want to do and connect with as everybody's recovering from the pandemic, and there's still a little bit of unknown that will happen with the pandemic. But I think that's really the concern on the job seeker side, and some are certainly in the process of retooling themselves too.
Matt Harrington of the Southwestern Vermont Chamber of Commerce passed along what he's been hearing from his members.
We probably have an acute pain right now that might be dissipated over time as different COVID benefits start to expire and we see more people get into the workforce. But I also think this gives us an opportunity to take a pause and say, we may not have the workforce we have had in the past like we do in the future. And so we need to get really creative and strategic about what that new workforce looks like. And that may be people working part-time, remotely. That may look like we need more technological help with skill sets that would have been done by a human earlier. Maybe we can lean on some new technologies that help us kind of just become more efficient in our workplaces. So I think there's kind of that acute pain right now that we hope through this job fair and other efforts by the Chamber and the Department of Labor, we can help kind of just assuage a little bit. But then I think there's a longer conversation we have to have about workforce in general. And I think that's changing, every single day.
Jackie Baker of Mother Myricks in Manchester was one of the employers who had set up her table and was hoping to find an experienced retail assistant manager and an experienced cake decorator and baker.
Well, there are just so few people, it seems, to be even looking for positions. And, we're currently advertising on Indeed and in newspapers. We have posters up around town. We have posters in the store. And there's just very, very few applicants. And we're looking for experience right now in experienced cake decorator, as well as assistant manager in the retail store. So both of those positions require experience, and it doesn't seem to be in very good supply right now.
Not far away, Nick Galt of the Southwest Vermont Supervisory Union was hoping to fill a variety of positions.
So right now we've got a mix of some teaching positions, both at the elementary level, middle school math, special education. We have some intervention teaching positions. We're also looking for some support staff, both paraprofessional, intensive special needs specialists. We have a secretary opening at Molly Stark Elementary School, as well as some evening custodian roles. That's pretty much the bulk of it. We've got some other positions, some intervention, literacy coach, math intervention positions as well that we're looking to fill. So quite a bit. Yep.
Then we ran into Timon Smith, who had recently moved to the Bennington area from Georgia, and he gave us his view from the employee side.
Yes, it is a lot of opportunity. It's just, I would think it's trying to find the right fit. So it's trying to find the right fit and also for your long-term career goals as well. I think for a lot of people in my age bracket, we're trying to find something that's a little more settled for the longer term, not trying to bounce around. So that's what my main goal is, to be finding somewhere that I can be staying with for the longevity.
Jane Woodcock of the Northlands Job Center was also at the job fair, pitching the services they were offering.
Right now, we are way down on student population, so if anybody's interested, now's a really good time to get involved. It's free, it's Department of Labor ran, so it's a taxpayer-funded program. Our average student is 16 to 24-year-old, and they can come there for different types of training. It is a dorm setting, so they would be living at the Job Corps Center. If somebody else would like to call up to get information, they're more than welcome to. They can email me at woodcock.gene@jobcorps.org.
Finding qualified workers is harder today than it's been in a while, and clearly the COVID pandemic has had a lot to do with that. Some workers have had the ability to wait on the sidelines and be choosy about what jobs they want to apply for, and some are sending the message that they won't just settle for any job, but want certain conditions around salary and career opportunities to be met. How this plays out in the long run is another question. Will it encourage some employers to look for technological solutions? Should the nation be open to more immigrants seeking a better life who are willing to accept jobs at salary levels employers are able to provide? Will things settle back into something resembling the pre-pandemic normal once the pandemic is, finally, under control? Or is this the beginning of a new normal? We'll have to wait and see. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.